Journal Radio, the Midwest's radio home for the outdoors.
Online at sportingjournalradio.com.
Hi, welcome to the show. I'm Brett Amundson. Thanks for tuning in across the network, on demand at sportingjournalradio.com and by subscribing to the podcast. More turkey tips with Tom Carpenter from Pheasants Forever coming up this week. We're also going to check in with Lucas Mertens from Haybale Heights Campground and Resort. Did some snow goose hunting up around the Devil's Lake area, and we'll talk to Lucas about what he's got going on and what his fields look like too as a farmer up there. This time of year, we'll see how much water he's got out in the fields up there. We'll also talk about farming with Joe Henry from Lake of the Woods Tourism, as well as fish and walleyes and sturgeon, Rainy River, Lake of the Woods, as people gear up for open water fishing. Everybody's excited about it. This week's show brought to you by Lake of the Woods Tourism. Plan your trip up to Lake of the Woods at lakeofthewoodsmn.com. Brought to you by Prairie Sportsman. Watch episodes all across the state of Minnesota on Pioneer Public Television and the other public stations across the state. Brought to you by Haybale Heights Campground Resort on Devil's Lake, haybaleheights.com, and also by Tazen Lake Lodge in northwest Saskatchewan with huge lake trout and giant pike. TazenLake.com for more details. All right, Joe Henry's joining us now. We're pretty excited, Joe. We're coming up to the Rainy River for giant sturgeon to film an episode of Prairie Sportsman. And by the looks of it, I've seen a lot of nice pictures on Facebook coming through of some pretty big sturgeon up there, Joe.
Fish are eating. It's that time. Yep. And you know what? This is a time that traditionally in the spring and the cold water time, those fish are active, and they really are active. They're catching fish up and down the river, you know, using the traditional sturgeon rigs with, you know, they use that five, usually it's like a 5-aught circle hook balled up with a whole bunch of night crawlers or a combo of night crawlers and frozen emerald shiners. And can you imagine, man, you put frozen emerald shiners plus night crawlers on a great big hook like that. Can you imagine that scent that's going downstream?
Oh, man, giant set cone. And it's not just sturgeon, but people catch walleyes doing that too. Sometimes it's so sometimes people overthink the walleye bite, I think, Joe.
Well, you know, when you talk about catching those big walleyes while you're fishing for a sturgeon out there, I think about tournament fish. I'm like, man, should I be out there sturgeon fishing?
Right. Not a bad idea. Yeah. And walleye fishing is not that far away either.
It's coming up. You know, May 11th is a Minnesota fishing opener. So we just finished up our spring season, April 14th. And then, you know, we got about a month or a little less than a month. And then May 11th is the Minnesota fishing opener. And that's when walleyes and saugers open on Lake of the Woods again. I'll tell you what, we're fired up. I mean, the opening day fishing on Lake of the Woods, if you've never done it, it is fun. It's normally a jig and minnow bite. And those fish are active as heck. They're close to shore. So people in, you know, just 16, 18 foot boats can access them very easily. There's fish left over in the river from the spawn. Some of them will stay in the river all year long. Some will slowly make their way out to Four Mile Bay and then out to the lake. There'll be a pile of fish out in that whole south shore, you know, up at the northwest angle, shoreline structure, island structure. It is such a cool time to fish. I mean, the fishing's so good. And, you know, I'm from central Minnesota originally. I know on opening day, if we got a couple of walleye, that was pretty darn good. Right. You go to Lake of the Woods, it's another deal, I'm telling you.
Yeah, and I know the spring has been really good up on the river as well. Last year was good all year. I'm definitely looking forward to getting up there for open water this year at some point, including next week for sturgeon. I kind of was hoping we get up there during the walleye season too, but we just couldn't make that work. We're filming for Prairie Sportsman, and I know, Joe, you were planning to be up there, but you've got some pretty important stuff that you're planning for the World Plowing Competition coming up later this summer, Joe.
Well, I tell you, it's pretty cool. And, you know, normally I'm not talking about farming or plowing, but, you know, as many folks, many listeners have heard, you know, we're hosting the 2019 World Plowing Contest. And first off, you know, people say plowing, what are you plowing? Well, it's a small tractor with a two bottom mold bore plow that plows soil. And there's a whole contest that many people throughout the world compete in where you plow and you get points based on how straight you plow, of course, no GPS, your depth of furrow, how clean the rows are, consistency of row height. I mean, there's so many criteria they go by. And it's interesting, you know, in a nutshell, there's 32 countries that will be competing in this contest. The top two competitors from each country who had to win their nationwide contest will represent their country. And so we're going to have 32 countries here. We're going to have, we estimate a crowd of about 30,000, we believe, over the course of 3 days. And the majority of those will be from, you know, farming and agricultural people from the Midwest and some from Canada. And, you know, it's going to be cool. This event comes to the U.S. once every 30 years.
Yeah.
Last year it was in Germany. Next year it's in Russia. And to think Lake of the Woods landed this worldwide event is pretty neat. And, you know, you can imagine the details behind it. But, Brett, it's cool. I mean, we got, you know, imagine that when you go to this piece of land. In fact, you know, Arneson's Rocky Point up at Lake of the Woods, that's the family that's putting up the land for this. They also farm. So we have a plot of land of about 1,000 acres. And we're going to have all the different fields all plotted out. The competitors on one day will plow stubble. The next day they plow grassland. The reason for that, each crop has a different root system and it plows differently. So, you know, we got that all set up. But through the middle of the fields, we got the infrastructure set up. That's going to be a combination of food and drink and live music. And there's booths being sold. So we have a bunch of vendors. We're selling sponsorships. So people that, you know, would benefit from being in front of an agricultural crowd are getting booth space, or they're getting ads in our commemorative program. And you can see all the details going on, but this is going to be one big party.
When is it, Joe?
It's going to be August 30th through September 1st, which is Labor Day weekend this year, 2019. So August 30th through September 1st. And all this stuff is taking place just a couple miles south of Bidet on, you know, Highway 72 and just off to the east a couple of miles. And so it's really close to Bidet. And, you know, we anticipate having people stay throughout the whole area, you know, Bidet, Warroad, Roseau. Some might even stay in Thief, Bemidji, and I Falls. And, you know, it's just going to be one of those deals where, you know, when it comes once every 30 years, it's really a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
Very cool. And you hear about cast and blast weekends at Lake of the Woods. How about a cast and plow weekend at the end of summer, beginning of fall? And, Joe, if people want to find out more information about this or plan a trip to Lake of the Woods, where should they go?
Absolutely. Everybody come up and get plowed. You know what?
I see what you did there.
You know, our website is lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
Hey, anglers, looking for a destination where walleyes, fresh air, and fish fries are a way of life? Look no further than the famous waters of Lake of the Woods. From Bidet and the Rainy River to the main lake up to the Northwest Angle. Here, you'll enjoy the best walleye catch rate in the state. Maybe you'll pursue world-class sturgeon, pike, or muskies. Plus, you'll find lots of full-service resorts offering charter boats, delicious meals, and lots of Minnesota nice. Come experience the walleye capital of the world. Come experience Lake of the Woods. Catch the details at lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
It's almost spring and soon the ice will be melting. Now is the time to start thinking about chasing big walleyes on Devil's Lake. Get on the fish at Haybale Heights Campground and Resort. Haybale Heights makes it easy for you to make memories on legendary Devil's Lake with guided fishing and lodging packages. Or bring your own boat and rent one of their cabins on East Bay. Haybale Heights offers a private marina, fish cleaning station, and the opportunity to relax and enjoy your bucket list trip to Devil's Lake, North Dakota. To book your trip, visit haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com.
If trophy lake trout and monster northern pike are on your list this summer, book a trip to Tazon Lake Lodge in northwestern Saskatchewan.
Everything from numbers to big fish.
See pictures, videos, and more at TazonLake.com.
This is quite the fishery.
Our five-star chef will feed you well after a day of chasing giants on Tazon Lake.
Dream come true.
Get rates, dates, and more of what you can expect.
It could be the best fishing you've ever had in your life.
At TazonLake.com. That's TazonLake.com. Tazon Lake Lodge is a proud partner of Tourism Saskatchewan.
Sporting Journal Radio is brought to you in part by Pioneer Public Television, producer of Prairie Sportsman with myself, Brett Amundson. Prairie Sportsman celebrates our love of the outdoors as we hunt, fish, and recreate while working to protect our valuable natural resources. Watch Prairie Sportsman Sunday nights at 7:30 on Pioneer Public Television, Thursday nights at 7:30 on KSMQ in the southern part of Minnesota, Saturdays at 2:30 on Lakeland Public Television in the north, or watch reruns Tuesdays and Thursdays on the Minnesota Channel, broadcasting throughout the region, or at PrairieSportsman.org.
All right, this is Sporting Journal Radio. I'm Brett Amundson. Thanks for tuning in across the network, online, on demand at sportingjournalradio.com and by subscribing to that podcast on iTunes. These are the fun shows that I really enjoy because right now we're sitting on a deck. We're at Haybale Heights Campground and Resort. We just got done snow goose hunting. We're here with Lucas Mertens, and we're just kind of enjoying life right now, Lucas.
You bet. You guys just got in from a good hunt, and we're just sitting around and actually enjoying North Dakota without any wind today.
That doesn't happen very often up here.
It doesn't seem like it.
The first snow goose I ever shot was in the Devil's Lake area, and it was nice to finally come back up here and chase some birds around. We had to put some miles on. A lot of the birds are north. You know, it's that time of year where we got to do a lot of scouting for them, and it's been a rough year because it's a lot of adults, but we had a fun time up here, and of course, it's always nice to come back and relax in one of your cabins here.
Yeah, you bet. You guys were probably 20, 25 miles away from home base here. And you called me up last night, said you got a place to stay. And I said, yeah, sure, we always got a place for you. And you came over, and your dog Mika's running around, and my son Porter's running around. And, yeah, we're just having a good time.
Well, I want to talk to Porter here in a second because we want to talk fishing, too. Obviously, right now it's kind of that spring snow goose season, kind of on the tail end of it. And you have cabins. We should mention, if people want to chase snows, come up here and chase waterfall around, whether fall, spring, or whatever. I mean, people can come up here and stay in some of your cabins, right?
Yeah, you bet. It doesn't matter if you're fishing or hunting geese or hunting ducks or just up here, you know, just sightseeing. You know, we got a cabin for you.
Or maybe fall fishing or spring fishing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we got all that, too. Yeah.
And you'd have some guided fishing. Otherwise, you can do it yourself and stay in one of your cabins here. And we should talk about conditions right now in the lake, because it's kind of that transition time where ice is not really good for fishing right now.
No, not many people fishing. I seen a couple diehards walked out and sat on a bucket, you know, next to one of the bridges. But I'd say 99% of the people are probably finished ice fishing and looking forward to getting the boat out or even doing some shore fishing. And, you know, Devil's Lake has some really, really good... you know, we get all the runoff from up north. You know, our basin comes from probably 60 miles north. And that water's running. And I was out checking some ground today, and I seen a lot of northerns in the culverts. And so them walleyes are right behind them. And a lot of people will go out and, you know, throw some plastics or some crankbaits for those walleyes too.
Yeah, you know, obviously the shore fishing is a big thing here, but historically when, and your season doesn't close here, so as soon as that ice comes off, you're going to have walleye anglers out there, and historically around what time of year does that generally happen?
Oh, I would say, you know, depending on the melt, that's probably, you know, May 20th to June 5th. And that's pretty a vague time, but it all depends on our melt and the temperatures. But I'd say by the, you know, the 5th of June, that's we're really cranking up. You know, that's big season there. That's it. Everything is usually full, and the fish are usually, you know, really on fire by then.
Lucas Mertens, our guest, Sporting Journal Radio, Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort. We're right overlooking Devil's Lake here, sitting on the porch at Hay Bale Heights. And who do you got here with you, Lucas?
This is my boy, Porter. He's 5 and a half, and he's quite the fisherman, aren't you, Porter?
How's it going, Porter?
Good.
Good, good. Hey, your dad was telling me about a fish that you caught this winter. Were you guys in one of the snow bears, Lucas?
Yep. And what'd you catch?
A big walleye.
A big walleye. Do you remember how big?
70.
No, not
70.
Well, 70.
Oh my God, we got a new
world record. But it was a 25-inch, wasn't it? And he reeled it in all by himself, and he was kind of freaking out that he wasn't gonna get it in, but he got it in all by himself, and very proud of him.
Wow, congratulations. That's Porter right there with Lucas Mertens here on Sporting Journal Radio. It was a pretty good winter for you up here.
Oh, absolutely. You know, we had some tough conditions. It was cold and we had a lot of snow, but hey, that's why we run the Snow Bears. And we preach that every weekend with you guys. And you know, we were able to take out, you know, this was our busiest season of the year. You know, we were running 4, 5, 6, even up to 8 Snow Bears some days. Jeez. And, you know, we... I felt like we took really good care of our clients, and we moved them around, you know, the best we can in them snow bears. And we might move, you know, a dozen times, we might move 20 times. And, you know, not every day do the fish cooperate, but, you know, most days, if you looked at what we caught, we had really good fishing. And, you know, I think our guys are proud of that, and we're actually already booking up for next year. You know, that's not a bunch of horse say. We're definitely putting some repeat clients back, and it's going to be a busy season next year, and I think we're going to have some really good fishing.
So you had a lot of ice. You definitely didn't have as much snow up here as we did where I'm at in western Minnesota, but you did have enough moisture. You think you might get... the lake level raised up just a little bit?
Yeah, so originally they were talking maybe 1.5 to 2 feet, and we had such a slow kind of perfect melt. Yeah, you know, from what I can see, we're probably going to be more like 1 foot, maybe 1.5 at the most. But they are forecasting some rain tonight. They're talking maybe 1/2 inch of rain. And you never know with the weather. But, you know, a foot and a half on Devil's Lake, that's a tremendous amount of water.
Obviously, you do a lot of farming. We've talked about it a lot here on the show. How are your fields looking right now?
You know, fields are in the Devil's Lake area are drying up fairly nice. You know, we farm all the way up to Clyde, North Dakota, which is, you know, almost 60 miles north of here. And they're, you know, they're typically always 10 days to 2 weeks behind. But everything is coming along nice. You know, we were fortunate we didn't get that big snow that, you know, Minnesota, South Dakota, Wisconsin picked up. You know, we probably would have took it if it came. But, you know, yeah, I'd say we're going to be in the fields, you know, maybe around the 1st of May, you know, for the most part, which is right on average for us.
Well, maybe this is a good time, too, to kind of remind people where the name Hay Bale Heights comes from.
Yeah, so the bay directly west of us, so I think it was back in 1996. So I was fairly young back then. The neighbor had a bunch of hay bales out there that he put up in the fall, and he didn't get them off the field. And then the lake came up about 2.5-3 feet that spring and flooded, you know, kind of breached the, you know, the land, you know, the landmark or the high ground. And then there was just this bay full of hay bales, and they were about half covered up. And then the next year, the lake came up another 3 feet and covered all these bales up. And I don't know, somehow it became called Hay Bale Bay, which, you know, fits real nice because there was probably about, I don't know, 150, 200 bales just out there, just and they were under the water. And then there was phenomenal fishing there for a couple of years because all our freshwater shrimp were right in these bales, and the fish were just right up in there feeding on them. So it kind of unique, you know. A lot of people, I wear a lot of sweatshirts and hats that say Hay Bale Heights, and could be anywhere in the world or anywhere in the country. And people say, well, I don't get it. What does Hay Bale Heights mean? But when I tell them the story, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, that's Lucas Mertens, Hay Bale Heights Campground Resort on Devil's Lake here. And it's funny that you talk about fishing next to hay bales like that, because when you hear stories of Devil's Lake over the last 20, 30 years, whatever, you hear about people fishing roads and old barns. That's and structure. You don't hear about hay bales very often.
No, you don't. If I could legally go recreate it, I would. You know, I'd go set some hay bales out there on the ice and let them go in. But yeah, lots of structure on Devil's Lake. Any type of fishing you want to do on Devil's Lake, whether it be winter fishing or summer fishing, I mean, you can do it. I mean, you can go out in the deep water and you control lead core and crankbaits. You can go in a little bit shallower, do spinners and like night crawlers and leeches, go on the roadbeds and jig. I mean, you know, Devil's Lake offers pretty much any type of fishing that you're comfortable with. You will catch fish on Devil's Lake.
You know, and obviously you have a guided fishing business. And so when we say, hey, if you want to come up to Devil's Lake, hire a guide, it's, you know, some people are like, I don't need a guide. I'm a pretty good angler. But with a lake like this and how much it's changed, you know, when we were out fishing last year, we were out with Curtis last summer fishing, and we came up to a bridge and he's like, yeah, we used to fish this bridge underwater. Right. And last year there was guys just sitting jigging off the bridge. Right. I mean, this lake changes year to year.
Yeah, I mean, our water, you know, level, you know, can fluctuate 2.5 feet year to year. And that doesn't sound like a lot, but it is. I mean, there's things that stick out of the water, and, you know, maybe that September time that you had no idea were there in June. And that's just Devil's Lake, you know. Maybe it's got that name for a reason, you know. I'd say Devil's Lake is probably one of the bigger lakes, you know, the lower end and the prop companies really like our lake, because there's just, you think you're in the middle of the lake and you're not. So, you know, any advice to people coming up is just to, you know, either hire a guide or get some knowledge of the lake and get a map. I mean, to come up on this lake blind is kind of like just sailing out into the middle of the ocean. But, you know, anglers can have success doing it on their own. They just got to, you know, put a little effort into it and ask the right questions, and they'll be very successful.
Yeah, and obviously you got a lot of guys in your campground that do it on their own, and you got these cabins here that people can rent so people can come up and fish and do it on their own. And I got to tell you, you know, I spent the last, I don't know how many springs, chasing snow geese around with my buddies with Mid-Migration Outfitters. And it's usually me and Tony and two of our other guides in a tiny little hotel room with two smelly dogs. And sometimes we're there for a couple of weeks on end. And it's like, you know, we tell people that and they just look at us like, who would ever want to do something like that? Then we came up here to Snow Goose Hunt and we're staying. I mean, these cabins are great, Lucas.
Yeah, we got five of the two bedrooms. They're about 1,000 square feet. Full kitchen in them. I mean, TV, internet, washer and dryer, dishwasher if you don't want to do your dishes. They got everything. And then we got one big three bedroom, two bathroom. I mean, I want to sleep up to 10 if you want to really put them in there. And these are the cabins that we use during our guided trips too. So, you know, we include our lodging during the guided trips, put you in one of these cabins. And most people, when they hear the word cabin, I've heard this now for 5, 6, 7, 8 years. They think they're coming up to a cabin and they're wondering if there's a, you know, where's the pile of wood to start the fire and get the heat going. But, you know, these are really...
Yeah, these aren't cabins. No, we should probably clarify.
Yeah, well, I'm going to call them a cabin just because it sounds nice. But right. Yeah, they're basically brand new, you know, houses. And, you know, a lot of people are like, wow, I just can't believe how modern and new that was when we used the word cabin. But when we built this place, I like to travel and hunt and fish. And I just wanted to, you know, kind of mimic what I would want to stay in and people that I would want to be around. And basically that's how we've built our business the last, you know, 8 years.
Well, I really appreciate you having room for us here while we're up here chasing these snow geese around. And thanks again. And good luck with everything here, Lucas.
Yeah. Thanks for coming up and thanks for having us on the show. And we're proud to be a sponsor.
Thank you.
All right, coming up next on Sporting Journal Radio, Tom Carpenter from Pheasants Forever. We continue with Tom from our interview from last week. We talk turkey tips as seasons opened up here in Minnesota and the states around us.
It's almost spring and soon the ice will be melting. Now is the time to start thinking about chasing big walleyes on Devil's Lake. Get on the fish at Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort. Hay Bale Heights makes it easy for you to make memories on legendary Devil's Lake with guided fishing and lodging packages. Or bring your own boat and rent one of their cabins on East Bay. Hay Bale Heights offers a private marina, fish cleaning station, and the opportunity to relax and enjoy your bucket list trip to Devil's Lake, North Dakota. To book your trip, visit haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com.
Sporting Journal Radio is brought to you in part by Pioneer Public Television, producer of Prairie Sportsman with myself, Brett Amundson. Prairie Sportsman celebrates our love of the outdoors as we hunt, fish, and recreate while working to protect our valuable natural resources. Watch Prairie Sportsman Sunday nights at 7:30 on Pioneer Public Television, Thursday nights at 7:30 on KSMQ in the southern part of Minnesota, Saturdays at 2:30 on Lakeland Public Television in the north, or watch reruns Tuesdays and Thursdays on the Minnesota Channel, broadcasting throughout the region, or at PrairieSportsman.org.
Hey, anglers, looking for a destination where walleyes, fresh air, and fish fries are a way of life? Look no further than the famous waters of Lake of the Woods. From Bedette and the Rainy River to the main lake up to the Northwest Angle. Here, you'll enjoy the best walleye catch rate in the state. Maybe you'll pursue world-class sturgeon, pike, or muskie. Plus, you'll find lots of full-service resorts offering charter boats, delicious meals, and lots of Minnesota nice. Come experience the walleye capital of the world. Come experience Lake of the Woods. Catch the details at Lake of the Woods. MN.com.
If trophy lake trout and monster northern pike are on your list this summer, book a trip to Tazzin Lake Lodge in northwestern Saskatchewan.
Everything from numbers to big fish.
See pictures, videos, and more at TazzinLake.com.
This is quite the fishery.
Our five-star chef will feed you well after a day of chasing giants on Tazzin Lake.
Dream come true.
Get rates, dates, and more of what you can expect.
It could be the best fishing you've ever had in your life.
At TazzinLake.com. That's TazzinLake.com. Tazzin Lake Lodge is a proud partner of Tourism Saskatchewan.
You're listening to Sporting Journal Radio.
All right, Sporting Journal Radio. I'm Brett Amundson. This is the Midwest's radio home for the outdoors. Thanks for tuning in across the network. Our guest once again this week is Tom Carpenter. He's the editor of Pheasants Forever's magazine, and he joined us last week to talk a little bit about pheasants and snow geese, and we started talking about turkeys, and I wanted to have him back on this week to offer some tips and tactics for turkeys as we get into the turkey season here in Minnesota and also the surrounding states. If you're tuning in, some guys, of course, have already been out this week, maybe been having some success out there. And Tom, thanks for joining us again this week on the radio show.
Yeah, it's good to be back. We got so enamored with snow geese and pheasants last week that we didn't quite give turkeys their due. So we're back to give the gobblers their time.
Absolutely. Anytime a bird can be considered big game, I think it deserves more time on the radio show.
Yeah, I do too. I sometimes, you know, people often ask me, what is turkey upland game or is it big game? And I say, yeah, it's big game.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're obviously a gallinate, what we'd call a gallinaceous bird, but, you know, they're big game in stature and a big game, and they're big game in the way of hunt them.
Right. And you, I've shot a couple with my gun. I've been trying, and I didn't get out much the last couple of years, just briefly. And I've been trying to do one with my bow now. I've been unsuccessful with it so far, but do you have a preference of which weapon you like to use, Tom?
I am a shotgun hunter. You know, sportsmen go through stages. We've all sort of read about the participation stage, the limiting out stage, the trophy stage, the method stage, back to mentoring. You know, I'm in my turkey in different sporting endeavors, and we all have them. We fish, we hunt different things, we fish for different things. And turkeys, I'm still I've never really passed out of that limiting out stage. I like to hunt turkeys and I like to get turkeys, and I don't apologize for it.
And that's great.
And I will say I do like to hunt with other people and take other people hunting. And I sort of count those. I sort of notch those on my belt if I can call one in and get somebody else to shoot one. And I tell you, I'm more nervous when I'm working a turkey with somebody else than for myself.
Sure.
Because it's that fun. It's that magic. It's that magnificent to call them in. And anybody who's hunted turkeys knows what I'm talking about.
So we're into the seasons already. I know a lot of people used to clamor for that first week of the season, and tags were always kind of tough to get. And I want to talk about how you feel when the best time of the year to hunt turkeys could be. But last week we talked about hung up birds, and I wanted to hit on this before I forgot about it, because of kind of what you just talked about, going out with a buddy and doing some calling for somebody else that's doing some hunting. And you mentioned something, I guess I'm not a big turkey hunter. I don't know a whole lot about them. And you hear about these hung up birds that stop halfway out. Ah, that bird hung up. And that's the way I always thought about it. Oh, he didn't want to cross that fence, or he didn't want to come any closer. He just got weirded out by it. But you said something that was pretty interesting last week, that when Hannah and a Tom talk to each other, they come towards each other and meet in the middle. And I guess I didn't really realize that, Tom.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, Brett, that's almost the best situation is hen, and for a hunter is hen and Tom meet in the middle. That's how it works. That's how natural selection has designed that turkey mating get together, the way they get together. And that's what often produces a hung up bird is that you as hunters, we make hen calls, and that gobbler approaches, he's expecting that hen to approach him and meet in the middle. A stationary hen isn't really natural or what he's used to or what his biology expects. He expects that hen to move toward him, and especially gobblers with a little experience are often pretty suspicious, and that's those guys that stop out there at 40, 50, 60 yards, and some, maybe you can't see them, maybe you can, but they stand there and gobble, or they gobble every once in a while, and they just won't come any farther. Now, here's the other thing. In if you think back to the landscape primeval before it was settled, before it's been changed, turkeys are lek birds. They're not unlike sharp tails or prairie chickens in the sense that they have dancing grounds, and the males come out and they set up a territory and they compete. That's why you see 5-6 gobblers sometimes, especially before they've dispersed, all in one area, and they're attracting hens by their gobbling. If anything, it's more natural for a hen to go to a gobbling turkey than it is for a gobbler to go to a hen. So those are the challenges we face when we're calling turkeys, and there's a lot of different things you can do. But I would say one of the most important things you can do is just keep working, because sooner or later, you're going to find that cooperative turkey, that hot turkey, that turkey that's ready to breed, and it will run into the calls, or at least come all the way in close enough for you to shoot him. And that's really the only trick to calling turkeys, is finding the right one.
Tom Carpenter, our guest, Sporting Journal Radio, and I wanted to bring that hung up bird scenario up, because when you talked about working birds for another hunter, calling at a time for another hunter out there, will you at times sit further back from where your hunter is to try to narrow that gap up of and make that Tom think that hen has come partway towards him?
I always start with the hunter, because usually if I'm out with a hunter, it's someone who hasn't hunted them before. Sometimes it's somebody with experience, but for the most part, I want to be there with them. And you can get by with a little whispering and a little talking and a little instructing, because it's a very unnerving process to have a 22-pound gobbler strutting in or approaching or sneaking in, and you don't just throw up a gun and shoot. There's a certain process to getting that turkey killed, and I like to be there. Now, that said, you sort of hit it on the head. If that gobbler's hanging up, or he's having problems, I'm having problems getting him all the way in, one of the best techniques is, I just call it flanking. And you can do it on your own, or you can do it with somebody. But what I'll do is let's say I'm alone. How I'll flank a turkey is, if he's hung up, I'll get up and move off to the side, or I'll move back, or I'll angle off like I'm going the other direction. And then I'll call him from there. And it's almost counterintuitive. It is counterintuitive to have to do it that way. But that's when you might get that gobbler to think, oh boy, she's getting away, I'm going to approach. Now, so that scenario is almost perfect where there are two hunters, because you can leave one hunter stationary and the other can sort of flank off and call as they go. And then there's a waiting hunter, right? You know, hopefully that turkey passes within range. So that is a good technique.
Tom Carpenter, our guest, talking turkeys here, Sporting Journal Radio. And I don't have many tips to offer, but this is one tip I always like to tell people, because of my first experience ever turkey hunting. And I didn't do it much growing up. And I think I shot my first turkey, it was 10, 12 years ago, whatever it was now. And I had my bow with, and I had seen a Tom strutting across a clearing inside some woods. There's a clearing in the woods. I saw him off on the other side. So I kind of crawled up, and I was sitting right on the edge of these woods on the close side of the clearing. And I set my deco out, started calling at him, and nothing. 15 minutes goes by, and all of a sudden this different Tom gobbled directly behind me and scared the heck out of me. So I always tell people, just be prepared for it to show up from any direction.
Yeah, and I've written a lot about turkey hunting through the years for a variety of publications. And one article I sort of reprise maybe every two or three years is called Sidewinders. And I call those sidewinders. A lot of times you kill a turkey that's not the one you were calling to. Like any gallinaceous type bird like that, pheasants or chickens or anything, there's a pecking order. Turkeys definitely have a pecking order. There are dominant toms and there are subdominant toms. It's often that dominant tom that is the one that's sort of standoffish and is what we're calling a hung up bird.
All right, I want to talk gear. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back. More turkey hunting tips with Tom Carpenter on Sporting Journal Radio.
If trophy lake trout and monster northern pike are on your list this summer, book a trip to Tazon Lake Lodge in northwestern Saskatchewan.
Everything from numbers to big fish.
See pictures, videos, and more at TazonLake.com.
This is quite the fishery.
Our 5-star chef will feed you well after a day of chasing giants on Tazon Lake.
Dream come true.
Get rates, dates, and more of what you can expect.
It could be the best fishing you've ever had in your life.
At TazonLake.com. That's TazonLake.com.
Tazon Lake Lodge is a proud partner of Tourism Saskatchewan.
Hey, anglers, looking for a destination where walleyes, fresh air, and fish fries are a way of life? Look no further than the famous waters of Lake of the Woods. From Bedette and the Rainy River to the main lake up to the Northwest Angle. Here, you'll enjoy the best walleye catch rate in the state. Maybe you'll pursue world-class sturgeon, pike, or muskie. Plus, you'll find lots of full-service resorts offering charter boats, delicious meals, and lots of Minnesota nice. Come experience the walleye capital of the world. Come experience Lake of the Woods. Catch the details at lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
It's almost spring and soon the ice will be melting. Now is the time to start thinking about chasing big walleyes on Devil's Lake. Get on the fish at Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort. Hay Bale Heights makes it easy for you to make memories on legendary Devil's Lake with guided fishing and lodging packages. Or bring your own boat and rent one of their cabins on East Bay. Hay Bale Heights offers a private marina, fish cleaning station, and the opportunity to relax and enjoy your bucket list trip to Devil's Lake, North Dakota. To book your trip, visit haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com.
Sporting Journal Radio is brought to you in part by Pioneer Public Television, producer of Prairie Sportsman with myself, Brett Amundson. Prairie Sportsman celebrates our love of the outdoors as we hunt, fish, and recreate while working to protect our valuable natural resources. Watch Prairie Sportsman Sunday nights at 7:30 on Pioneer Public Television, Thursday nights at 7:30 on KSMQ in the southern part of Minnesota, Saturdays at 2:30 on Lakeland Public Television in the north, or watch reruns Tuesdays and Thursdays on the Minnesota Channel, broadcasting throughout the region, or at prairiesportsman.org.
You're listening to Sporting Journal Radio.
Back, Sporting Journal Radio. Thanks for tuning in across the network on demand at sportingjournalradio.com or by using your favorite podcast app. I'm Brett Amundson. Our guest, Tom Carpenter, editor of Pheasants Forever's magazine and also avid turkey hunter. Before the break, you were talking about a certain type of bird and you had a name for him, Tom.
There's these subordinate birds, and I call them sidewinders for fun. And they sneak in from the side, from the back, often silently, and they just show up because they hear all this gobbling going on, and they hear a hen calling, and they've been kicked around by that big gobbler, but they've got the breeding urge, and their idea is to sneak in and get a little action. Don't put all your eggs into that basket of a gobbler you're calling to. Have your eyes open to different sides and even behind you. And it's often, if you're hunting with a partner, a pretty good technique is each of you sit back to back. One faces one direction, one faces the other direction. You have your 180-degree safety zone for shooting, and go at it.
We're into the season already. The first week of the season is going on, and a lot of people, historically, it seems like, have tried to draw this first season. And sometimes when you have late winters, it pushes the timing of how the birds are acting later in the year. Sometimes it's earlier. What do you think about being the best time of the season to hunt turkeys?
Well, you know, that's a good question. It's a great topic. Is, you know, and as turkey hunting has evolved in Minnesotans, I'll use that as an example, have learned about turkeys, the demand for early season tags has gone way down, such that now in many units in the state, and as we talked before, only the first 2 weeks, week A and week B, are lottery. Many of those don't even sell out. So hunters are learning. And it's a couple things. One, the earlier in the season it is, the harder it is to be able to predict what the weather is going to be. And we saw that last week with that snow that came in before the first season and the cold. And even 2 years ago, we had that horrible April. So that's one thing is early season can be tough. And you know, initially everybody thought, oh, I got to get out there early, and that's when the turkeys are ready to rock and roll. And that's true to some extent. There's more turkeys than at any other time of the season. There's quote unquote dumb ones or inexperienced ones. You shouldn't actually use that word dumb with turkeys. They are wary and smart, but there's inexperienced ones. I've got to be honest. I'm not. I've evolved with that. I'm actually a big fan of May turkey hunting. I think May is the month to be out. And the beauty in Minnesota, in particular, is there's no limit on the tags. If you can choose your week to go, you don't have to put into a lottery and cross your fingers and hope. And you've got a much better chance of steady weather in May. you know, a lot of biological studies into have been done through the years on turkey gobbling, and turkey gobbling frequency is sort of is a good indicator of breeding urge. And there's a couple turkey gobble peaks. One is early in the season that as the daylight really extends and the turkeys start, you know, dispersing from their winter groups. And there's always a second gobbling peak, and that happens somewhere around the mid part of May. We'll say the 10th to the 20th in the upper Midwest here, which I would consider Minnesota, Wisconsin, North and South Dakota. And that, to me, is one of the key times. I always make sure I'm turkey hunting somewhere between May 10th and 15th. And if spring is late, I actually like that 15th to the 20th of May just as good. Because one of the advantages, and there's few advantages you have as a turkey hunter, but one you get at that time of year is most hens are starting to sit on their nests by about mid-May. And you can look at various studies between Minnesota and Wisconsin, but May 18th is about an average date for most hens to already be on their nest. That means some are starting earlier, some are starting later, but that, so, and that is an advantage to you as a turkey hunter, because gobblers are lonelier with hens on the nests.
Tom Carpenter, our guest, Sporting Journal Radio. So do you change tactics or gear depending on the time of year, or do you have kind of a go-to, this is the decoy, or these are the decoys that I'm going to bring, I'm going to use a ground blind, I'm going to sit next to this tree, I'm going to try to locate them where they're roosting first? What's your go-to?
My go-to is, you know, it's pretty similar the whole season. You know, I guess the best tip I can give is, you know, having done some scouting and knowing where their turkeys are is the number one goal, that the number one work you can do to assure a chance for success. And I don't know if turkeys are patternable, but I think they go on circuits, and they're not a day by day pattern, but they're every 2 to 3 days. I always get the feel they move around, you know, and it's important to be out there at the crack of dawn. That's what turkey hunting is about. You know, you live to see the dawn, to hear the cardinals start to call, to hear the whippoorwills calling, and then the turkeys start gobbling, and to get in position and try and call that gobbler in. And that's the epitome of turkey hunting, but that's not when a lot of turkeys are shot. I think more turkeys are shot, you know, you read a lot in the popular press, like mid-morning. I got to be honest, I think during those time frames that in May, when the days are so long, I think like 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock, that's just primo time. So if you're out hunting turkeys and you don't shoot one in the first half hour, by the time the sun comes over the horizon, your best time is yet to come, because sooner or later, those hands are going to start ignoring the gobblers, and they'll come back and they'll look for you calling. So that's sort of my tip, is no matter whether it's early or late in the season, you know, get out there and hunt hard early in the day. You'll kill some turkeys that way, but don't ignore that, not even that mid-morning time, that sort of betweener time when the gobblers are starting to look around for some action when the hens have left them.
Now, do you move around to different spots, or do you sit kind of in one spot all morning?
It's pretty much dictated by, you know, the place I'm hunting and how I'm feeling. It's hard to say, but, you know, most of us are hunting tracts of land that are limited in nature as far as acreage. And a lot of times in that situation, your best plan is to know a good spot where you like turkeys, where you've seen turkeys, and wait them out. I would say the patience kills more turkeys than any other technique. And that is definitely the number one approach. Now, that said, I'll move out. For instance, some places, like if I go out to the Black Hills or out in western Nebraska or down in Missouri in huge, expanses of timber. Then sometimes I just call it trolling. Some people call it run and gun, but trolling in the fishing sense, you go out and you call, you try and get a gobble, and then you set up and try and work them in. That's one of those midday techniques there. But I guess my number one advice to the beginning / intermediate turkey hunter, to the person who just wants to get birds, waiting patiently at a spot where you know turkeys like to travel or be is your best bet. If you have patience, you'll kill turkeys.
Do you like using decoys, multiple decoys, one hand, maybe a Jake? What do you like to use?
My basic approach with decoys is pretty simple. As you can tell, I keep things on the simple side. I rarely, if ever, use decoys in the woods. I think it tends to, if the turkey spots them, then they spot them and they know, oh, there's that turkey. She should be coming my way. You know, we've talked about meat in the middle. I think that's a recipe, especially if it's open type woodlands, to hang up a turkey. Now there's a lot of, there's never an absolute, but that's just one of the rules of thumb I follow. I do like to use a gobbler or a decoy in open fields, because especially if the turkeys haven't been hunted that much there, especially if they hear you calling, if you're on the edge of a woods or in a little point or tucked in a nook or a cranny or a little swale, you know, if a gobbler hears a hen calling, he's going to want to see it, and he might get suspicious if he doesn't. So decoys are one of those dilemmas, and I've written about that a lot too. There's a lot of decoy dilemmas. Do I put one out? Do I not put one out? If you made me choose, take a decoy or not, or I always trend away from decoys. I think we're habituating turkeys to decoys, especially turkeys that have had some bad experiences with decoys. They will run the other way.
Interesting. That's Tom Carpenter, Sporting Journal Radio, talking turkey here as we get into the turkey season here in Minnesota and all the other states around us as well, too. Some good stuff, some great points, and I appreciate the time here this week and last week on the show. Good luck during your turkey season, and again, thanks for being on Sporting Journal Radio, Tom.
Thanks, Brett. It was my pleasure. I hope everybody has a good turkey season.
Have you listened via the podcast app yet? Well, you can get it on any phone out there, smartphone anyway. Download the podcast app or use the one that comes with the iPhones and subscribe to Sporting Journal Radio to listen anywhere you go. I like to listen while I'm in the car traveling. I spend so much time in my truck driving around the country in Canada that I cover a lot of that ground listening to podcasts. Also, follow us on Facebook. You can get newsworthy and noteworthy items like the depopulation of that CWD-positive deer farm in Crow Wing County. Find us at Sporting Journal Radio on Facebook. Thanks for listening. You've been listening to Sporting Journal Radio, the Midwest's radio home for the outdoors. To listen to the show again, go to sportingjournalradio.com or download the podcast in your podcast app or iTunes. Find us on Facebook. Search for Sporting Journal Radio.